Michelle Marie McGrath.
Welcome to Unclassified Woman, and today I'm delighted to be speaking to the radiant Anaya Sophia. Anaya Sophia is a mystic, author, and initiator of sacred marriage and the mystical teachings of the feminine Christ. She's a wellspring of both wisdom and experience and is known for her role in birthing new paradigm relationships and divinized sexuality. Her unyielding passion is to help people transition from codependent relationships into a thriving union based on love and freedom held within a holy, sanctified container. Anaya offers medicine of a Gnostic variety, understanding the need to feel the staggering love of the universe in every cell of the body in order for us to truly birth what we are capable of birthing. Her work is streaming forth through the feminine aspect of Christ consciousness, which includes the tantric, virgin, and mystical expressions represented by Mary Magdalene, Mother Mary, and the Black Madonna. Her books include Open Your Heart with Kundalini Yoga, Pilgrimage of Love, Womb Wisdom, which is a brilliant book, Sacred Sexual Union, and The Rose Knight. Anaya lives in the Languedoc region of southern France, where she coordinates sacred tours to Israel, Egypt, Peru, Morocco, Ireland, and of course in the south of France at her property Amarosa. You can find out more about her and her work at anayasophia.com. That's AnayaSophia.com. And I loved this conversation. We talked a lot about the sacred energy of the womb in birthing and creating all sorts in our lives, whether that's physical manifestations or non-physical. So enjoy. So excited to have Anaya Sophia here with us today to talk about this subject, which is just fascinating. And so, Anaya Sophia, to start off our conversation, would you mind sharing a little bit about your background and whether or not it was a personal choice?
Well, I would say from a very early age, from the age of seven, actually, I became deeply interested in spiritual things, things of a deeper meaning, of a deeper value. And there was an incident where I met this, what I now call an angel. I met this angel literally, physically, in the body, on the steps of the Sacré-Cœur in Paris. And I saw such a beautiful emanation of light and love in his eyes that I began searching for that everywhere. Wow. And of course, as I moved into my teenage and my young 20s, I began looking for that pair of eyes in a man, in a relationship. Mm. And then that sort of moved into yoga. So I started to become trained as a Kundalini yoga teacher. So that particular look, you know, the look in the eyes, that then transferred itself from a man into God. Right. Into Yeshua, into a Christ figure. And then that quality of love just became bigger and bigger and bigger. So as I was going through the Kundalini yoga training, this energy, this desire, this intention, this longing, in fact, that's the right word, this longing just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I just had a quiet, sober moment with myself where I realized, you know, if I was to turn now from this momentum and have a child or a family or get married and turn instead, you know, to the world, to the material world and what that might expect of me, I knew I wouldn't be satisfied. I knew I would have turned my back on something that I truly, truly had faith in. And that faith was to just keep going. Keep going with this longing, see where it leads. And it didn't mean that I was separating myself from, you know, from life and the rest of my human family. It meant that everyone that that I worked with, everyone that I became close with, they would get some of that mother love.
Yeah.
Instead of my physical offspring. Everybody became a son and a daughter.
Was that a gradual realization? Had you thought when you were younger, had you just assumed, like a lot of people do, yeah, I'll probably have children later?
No.
So that's interesting.
From the very beginning.
Yes.
I never had that brooding feeling. I never had that moment where I really wanted a child. I mean, I loved, my God, when I was in relationship with my boyfriends, flipping heck, I'm a huge romantic. So I dreamed of the house. I dreamed of the farm. I dreamed of having animals. I dreamed of, you know, making a fire and cooking for him and loving him. So I had all of that. But there was never the vision or the sensation of kids as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting when people feel so clear about that. It's really so distinct. And so it's not like then you didn't go through any kind of grieving process of letting that go because you hadn't that longing for that experience.
Well, actually, there was a moment. There was a moment in my 35th year where because of the yoga practice, you know, my consciousness was expanding. And so my consciousness said, you must turn and face this part of yourself. You must give yourself a certain period of time where your soul and your humanness have this conversation about children.
Right.
So I call it descending. I descended down into the mortal woman, you know, the human woman that I am, and just said, okay, speak to me. Speak to me of your desires. Let's have this conversation. Is there any part of you that is grieving, that could grieve later in life? You know, let's be together and have that conversation. And there was grief there.
Yeah.
There was. Mm. But it did not compare with the longing. So, the longing didn't look at the grief and go, oh, you know, you're insignificant. I haven't got time for you. The longing turned around and embraced that grief and said, yes, my love, I know how you're feeling. I know how you're feeling. And the longing didn't even try and change the grief's mind and say, look, you know, I have so much longing for something else. The longing just held the grief until the grief melted and sided and became the longing.
Beautiful.
Because my deepest heart knew this was the almighty truth for me.
Yeah. And that's all that we can ever hope for, that we are listening to our truth and not being overly influenced by everybody else's.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the challenge.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I remember this took about an 8 to 9 month process, actually. And I did, you know, I did go into some very depressed places.
I remember it was a few years ago. I was reading your book, Womb Wisdom, Awakening the Creative and Forgotten Powers of the Feminine. And I loved that. And just it spoke to me so much, so many parts of it, that connection with that creative center. How did you come to focus working very consciously on that aspect of you know, the feminine?
Well, again, it really presented itself in a very big way, Michelle. I remember the co-author of Womb Wisdom, Padma, he asked me to co-write with him. And at the time, I was a Kundalini yoga teacher, and I had no clue, really, about the womb. The only thing I had was like the yogic understanding of the subtle anatomy, you know, nadis, chakras, Kundalini, Shakti, all of that stuff. But all of this was coming out of books, you know. This was something I had learned.
Yes.
It was, by golly, something I had not lived. But within a few days of agreeing to co-write with him, I had my gynecological results come back from my latest smear test, my latest pap smear. And So I was showing signs of extreme unusual activity in the neck of my cervix. They called me up. The doctors called me up with like a sense of urgency that something had showed up. It was grade four, and grade five is like the worst case scenario. It was grade four, and they wanted to book me into the hospital the following day. But I was actually moving to France with Padma. We were going to start a life together in France. And so I was not going to let that happen for so many reasons. I was not going to block my journey to France. And I certainly didn't want to take that particular path because what they were offering was surgery. Yeah. And I knew, oh, come on, I've just agreed to write Womb Wisdom. And now I have a health issue in the womb, in the cervix. But I already knew something was up years back. Yeah. Because I knew that I had jumped, as a being, I'd jumped from my sort of animal nature. I'd leapfrogged over my sexuality and jumped into my heart thanks to the Kundalini yoga. I knew I had to go back and readdress my sexual issues, my body, the relationship with my body, the relationship with me and other women, the relationship with me and my male partners. Yeah. So I flipping well knew. So when that phone call came, yes, of course, I was upset and afraid. But again, you know, the longing, the deeper part of me, the wisdom said, okay, my beloved, you are now going to go on a big journey and you are going to be able to write that book, Womb Wisdom, from a very authentic and vulnerable place. Yeah. I knew the two things were hand in hand.
And so how did that then change your perspective going through that process where sounds like you were then really integrating all of those intellectual learnings that you absorbed over the years through the work you were doing? So did that then change your perception of what it meant to be a woman and other women?
Totally. Michelle, it unearthed everything. I had to unearth the deepest, darkest shadows connected with sex, the body, nature, the male gender. It all had to come out. It was time to go into Pandora's box. And, you know, that was 2009. You know, the whole thing, meeting Padma, womb wisdom, the health journey, it was epic. It was an epic moment. It was a turning point on so many levels.
Wow. And so how long did it take to kind of move through that process? I mean, I know we're always learning. Was there like a set period of time where you felt it was particularly intense?
Oh, totally. From the moment of that phone call, I knew I now had to address something very, very quickly because something was showing in the body. Mm. And the doctors in the UK, they were not happy at all that I was refusing surgery. So they needed to be linked up with where I was going to be living in France. So obviously my nearest hospital was Carcassonne. So they needed to know the details of the doctor in Carcassonne. And, you know, they were just reluctant to let me just disappear off the radar. And I said, listen, I'm going to take an alternative journey. I'm going to address this in my way first. Oh, you know, I was friends with the doctors and the nurses in the UK, so they knew what I was like. They knew I was into yoga and stuff.
Oh, no, here we go.
But they gave me a time limit. They said, okay, 6 months. You have 6 months to show signs of improving. Otherwise, you have to take this path of surgery. So that was it. You know, as soon as I moved and settled into France, Padma and I were just addressing this in the ways that we had envisioned. So again, we had no real, you know, no one was teaching us. Yeah. We had a stream of consciousness flowing through that suggested that we were having memories of ancient womb wisdom. You know, we call it the lineage of the ancient mothers. Right. So we just trusted that. We trusted it. No one taught us We were tapping into something, and here I was in a situation that desperately needed that womb wisdom, and we were applying it in the moment to myself as the guinea pig.
And I'm sure it worked.
It did. So I would say, to answer your question, again, 9 months, there's that number again, you know, for pregnancy. So 9 months' time, finally, in comes the all clear from the French hospitals. It's gone. No surgery needed. All is well.
Wow. And so what was your biggest lesson during that time? I mean, it must have brought up all sorts of questions and beliefs for you to explore from every angle.
The ultimate thing was trust. I had to trust the process. I had to trust Padma and what he was feeling was the right course of action for healing. I had to trust that he would hold me as I came up with copious amounts of distrust for the masculine. And this is what it was. This was what was at the root of the health issue in the cervix. It was a rage, a massive, massive rage. That was the cover-up. So the cover-up was a rage against the masculine. And what was underneath was this, oh, my God, this intense distrust. So, so afraid, so alone, so afraid, so lonely, so empty, wanting so desperately to trust the masculine, even, you know, my own masculine. So the part of me that likes to go out and be all ambitious and driven and successful. Mm. And the other part that just wants to stay at home and read books and play in the garden.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, the whole topic of the womb is so, in our society, I mean, our immediate connotation just goes like, okay, menstruation, period, childbirth, these kind of things. It's often associated in our psyche actually with the pain of being a woman.
Yes.
So,
absolutely. And the memories, you know, the collective memories of what that used to mean. Mm. Witchcraft, you know, and where I live in the south of France, you know, the Cathars. There's so much in the collective of what it means to be a woman and doing feminine work, feminine spirituality.
In a Catholic country.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
And so obviously as well, like that part of the body, we store so much in the organs there. And, you know, especially the womb, we just, and if we think about situations such as like abortion or miscarriage, anything that happens there, there can be so much sadness and guilt and shame and all of these things that are deeply stored there. And
absolutely.
So where do you think is a good place to start for somebody who's really still coming to terms with an experience like that, where they've not fully processed what happened and they're not really clear or sure of how to connect with that part of their body in a loving way?
What I did is I made a womb-like environment on the outside. So at the very, very beginning, my mind was so, you know, rampantly part of me that if I even tried to meditate or pray in the region of the womb, my mind would just, you know, start chatting away and I'd be distracted and I'd come out of the experience. So I said to myself, okay, so the inside is off limits at the moment because I'm, you know, there's so much fear around there. Let me create a womb environment on the outside. So I actually made myself a place where I would lay down, a place where I would listen to music, a place where I would write. And everything about this place was so, so, so deeply feminine and obviously feminine. So I brought in flowers, I brought in pictures of women, I brought in roses, my blankets were red, you know, my candles were gold. So I started to create this external environment that was very, very feminine and very, very embracing and forgiving and accepting and allowing.
Mm.
So, and so as you know, every day I would see it. And then, of course, it started to show itself on the inside.
Yeah.
I'd have to just close my eyes and suddenly I see the external womb environment on the inside. So now I'm starting to connect the two, the inner and the outer.
Right.
And so in the external womb environment, I would lie down, get under the blankets and rock myself and cry and allow, you know, a couple of layers of grief to be let go. But then as soon as the environment started to show itself on the inside, that's when I could really get into it. Because it was such a tender realization that what I'm seeing on the outside, that lovely, cozy space that I go to, there's another one on the inside. And that's me. That's who I am. That's my soul.
Yeah.
And so that just allowed more sweet tenderness to arise.
And I suppose in that time you were really learning to really focus that mothering, loving, nurturing energy on yourself.
Absolutely, Michelle. That's it right there and then.
Yeah.
All that mother energy that I was not choosing to embody was now coming in through the bucket load towards my own adult self and child self.
And it's really, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's true. But they say, you know, one of those sayings is really growing up is about learning to parent yourself.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
You know, which is easier said than done a lot of the time when we're so externally focused on our relationships with others and trying to get love elsewhere rather than focusing that energy inwards.
That's right. Yes. Exactly right.
And so obviously as you were focusing more and more on that and starting to feel much more nourished from within, and you were obviously, you'd created that environment so that you could receive that from yourself.
Yes.
Did you start to notice then how that was obviously overflowing into your other connections and relationships?
Totally. I began to feel so much more present and peaceful. You know, my position on earth, being human, it, you know, a deep, deep sense of like gravitas started to come into me. And that, you see, to me, that's the qualities of the womb awakening.
Mm-hmm.
This sense of deeper gravity, anchoring, you know, something. When I say heavy, I don't mean like burden. I mean presence now in my belly. And it wants to sink into the same presence that's found in the earth. So, you know, I used to call that the womb of the world.
Right.
Everything that is created has a womb. It has to pass through some kind of birthing portal.
Yeah.
So I started to like, whoa, I can feel the womb of all the female animals. I can feel the womb of the planet. I can feel the womb of the universe, you know, like galactic center or the black hole. So suddenly now everything has this kind of womb quality.
Well, it is. So it's that portal of all creation, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So I began to call it the web of life, you know, and this great sense of belonging.
Beautiful.
I am female. I belong. I birth. I create physical and non-physical offspring.
And so with that, if we know that we're not going to physically have a child, then how can we best really harness that energy to birth the best version of ourselves? I mean, obviously that's a great start, like you're saying, really creating that outer environment to support being more loving towards yourself. But then to really consciously work very specifically with tuning into that energy, and I guess even if it's just small things like placing your hand on your belly and having that intention.
That's it.
For somebody who's really unfamiliar with those sorts of practices, is there like a simple thing that we can do each day to start that off, even like a 5-minute practice that you think would be, you know, just a great way to start for somebody that's thinking, okay, I really love the sound of this, but how do I start with that?
Well, I would say to use the mind, use your awareness, your realization that inside of your belly is a very creative force. It's a birthing force. So just like you were saying, Michelle, I'd sit in meditation with my hands over the belly, over the womb, and I would just put the little pebble in the pond. What shall I create today? What shall I birth today? Or what am I birthing? And instead of, see, what I see is sometimes ladies turn away from the childbirth or family, the rearing period. They sort of almost turn their back on it in quite a cold and severe way. And that troubles me because I don't feel that that's the answer. Yeah. All you're doing is you're making a choice not to have physical offspring. That does not mean that you shall not have non-physical offspring. I think that is like the holy grail of what I'm saying, because there's many types of offspring. All women in every age of their threefold journey can facilitate. The womb is going to be birthing things anyway. So be aware of that creative force and that creative potential.
Absolutely. And I guess we are creating all the time, whether we're doing that consciously or unconsciously. So
that's
if
right.
we can harness that very, in a very sort of clear and focused way to work
that's
with
right.
that energy, that can be very transformative, can't it?
Absolutely. And the womb can also carry, ancestral contracts. And these ancestral contracts can get passed into our sons and daughters, our physical offspring.
Yes.
So traits, family ancestral traits. If you don't have the physical children, those ancestral traits are still going to come into manifestation through your work, through your home environment, through your relationships. And that's what I mean by birthing. In our bellies, we're also carrying those family traits.
Yeah.
So be mindful, be aware. What am I birthing out into the world? Because it has the power to stop, especially if these are negative and harming traits.
Yes.
We have the power as women to stop that, that ignorant trait from being passed on.
Yeah.
It's all in our tummies. We are the web of life. We are the ones creating this new earth.
Absolutely.
And our new societies, our new families, our new relationships. The masculine, I feel he holds the vision. He holds the vision of the new earth, but he doesn't create it. The feminine creates it. He has the vision of the template. We're the ones that brings flesh to the bones.
Yeah. And so it's really interesting, obviously, all this evolution that we are experiencing, I feel, very much in our society. I think this is a really interesting time to be here with all
yes.
these changes taking place and women and men, I guess, really redefining what their feminine energy, what their masculine energy means to them and working
yes.
with that, hopefully, in a more balanced way.
Yeah.
And some of the things that I've been looking at is, some of the myths and the stereotypes that exist that are really kind of outdated and not serving us in moving forward and evolving. So one of the things that we are programmed to believe is if being a mother in the traditional sense is not something that you're yearning for, then, clearly there must be something wrong with you. Like it's unnatural in inverted
yeah.
commas.
Yes.
And yet, as we know, it's not the role of every woman to give birth in that way.
Yes.
We know that just by the amount of children that there are in the world who are not being nurtured and mothered adequately.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's really sort of bringing all of these stories and these myths and stereotypes out much more into the open so that we can explore them and dissolve them really, and then reform what our truth is and what, you know, what's right for us. And I guess it's bringing in more compassion for all of women's, you know, all women's stories and experiences.
Absolutely. And what sometimes I wonder, you know, we're going through this massive transformation, and, you know, everyone's talking about this return of the divine feminine, and that, you know, life as we know it may change in the coming years. So, and of course, there are many women now in a place of, you know, the freedom to choose, because obviously, you know, our mothers may not have had that freedom.
Yeah.
It was completely and utterly expected of them.
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering, have we chosen not to do the physical offspring, because what we're going to be birthing is something else, you know, the non-physical.
Yeah.
And that serves everyone. It serves all of life, humans, animals, minerals, you know, the elementals.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting to have more and more of these types of conversations.
Yeah.
And it's not that, I mean, I don't know anyone who's actually that doesn't like children per se. I haven't come across that at all. That is not it. And again, that's kind of another bit of a myth that sometimes comes up. Oh, well, don't you like kids? Well, yeah, I do. That's not it at all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's interesting how some women just feel very called in very different directions to create, you know, different paths of service.
Yes.
And and meaning and fulfillment comes in so many different ways, as we
That's
know.
Right.
We can't generalize. So it's really interesting, this point in our time, and, you know, to see how things evolve over the coming years, really, because as I'm sure you know, like, women age 40 and over now, 25% of women don't have children. That figure's doubled.
Wow.
It's doubled in the last 10
Totally.
Years.
It has, yes.
Yeah, and in the States, it's nearly 50% of women of a childbearing age don't have children. And, of course, many different reasons, so many different reasons for that, that, again, and I'm realizing every woman's story is completely different.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's just, it's a very, very interesting time. And one of the things I was looking at is, for the verb to mother, one of the meanings is to produce.
Yes.
And so I find that really interesting, that, you know, those of us who are not giving birth to physical children are producing in other ways.
That's what I mean. That birthing energy is still going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
If it can be gathered and harnessed and, you know, utilized with awareness, you know, how I am, how you are, Michelle, you know, we're channeling it into something else that serves, that will always serve the life, serve all life. It's like, it's the grail energy.
Yes, the grail absolutely.
The grail serves all of creation.
I know a lot of your work is with the divine feminine, and obviously representations of that, such as Mary Magdalene, and all of those sites like that are linked to, you know, the south of France and all of that. And so obviously there's a lot of talk about the rise of the divine feminine and these different archetypes. Are you really noticing that more and more in your work and your interactions with other women?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Living down here in the south of France, I, you know, it's like I'm in the epicenter.
Yeah.
I'm in the vortex. I'm in the portal where all of this is just spiraling out into the world.
It's so exciting, I feel.
Yes. Gosh, yeah. Absolutely.
It really is. So very interesting times that we're in. And so, what do you feel are the major benefits that you've experienced by not having physical children?
I would say the emotional and conscious openness and time to deepen who and whatever I am and am becoming. So there's this luxury of my own time again, external time. So I have plenty of time in the day and the night to explore, to contemplate, to be with myself, to be alone, and to be connected.
Yeah.
And that's the, you know, that's in the course of my day and night, my 24-hour period of being human on the earth. And then, of course, I have also the luxury of the internal psychic space is also very free and open and uncluttered.
Yeah.
So to me, that is priceless. That is priceless that I have this luxury of spaciousness in my external world, in my day, and also in my internal world, in my psychic space.
Absolutely.
It's not filled with too much, you know, things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I still got flipping a list as long as my arm and leg of, you know, the things I do have to do, but they don't, it doesn't pull on me emotionally.
Yeah, in the same way that it would.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, brilliant. Well, I've so loved talking to you, and I just,
me too,
it's
Michelle.
Such a fascinating topic. So, where's the best place for people to find you online and learn more about your work and your retreats and your books, which are all amazing?
Well, that would quite simply be my website, which is my whole name in one. So, AnayaSophia.com.
Well, thank you so much.
And thank you for this conversation. My God, it's so important.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Unclassified Woman. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. For information on events and services, connect with Michelle at michellemariemcgrath.com.